Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Today on your show, Career Buzz takes a second tour of the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's first conference and brings you the more presenters and insights and interviews to inspire your life, your career, and your practice. Hi, it's Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles, a career management social enterprise. And I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz. Thanks for tuning in this morning. And a special welcome to members of the Association of Career Professionals International and members of the Canadian Positive Psychology Association tuning in on the internet from across Canada and the globe. It was a real pleasure and full of insights for me to attend the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference in Toronto, July 20 and 21. Attending in part as your Career Buzz correspondent, I collected interviews that we'll share today as part two of a two-part Career Buzz series that began on August 15th. To listen to that show, go to careercycles.com and click Career Buzz Radio Show. I'm joined this morning by Lisa Sansom, conference chair of the Canadian Positive Psychology Association. Looking to move her high school teaching career into school administration, Lisa first did an MBA, which opened her to the world of organizational development, which then led her to take a coaching certification and following that pursuing a Master of Applied Positive Psychology. Lisa Sansom, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Glad you could join us this morning, and I'm looking forward, Lisa, to curating these interviews that we've put together at the conference. Before I let listeners know who's coming up, please take a moment and introduce us to the Canadian Positive Psychology Association and the conference.
Sure. The Canadian Positive Psychology is a national organization with the mandate of bringing more well-being and more positive psychology to all Canadians. We've been around for about a year now, and back in July was our first conference. It was a huge success. We were absolutely thrilled with the quality of speakers, as your listeners are about to hear, and the variety of positive psychology topics. We are growing. We encourage everyone to go and take a look at our website, which is positivepsychologycanada.com, and sign up for our newsletter to learn more about positive psychology in Canada.
It really was a great conference, Lisa, and thanks for all of us who went and heard some amazing presentations. Before I give listeners the lineup for who we're going to hear from today, I said in the intro here that you were a school teacher who did an MBA. Now, that's not a typical thing for school teachers to do. What led you to do an MBA?
I taught high school for 7 years. I taught English and French and really enjoyed working with teenagers and had thought that I might move into administration. And to be a school administrator, you need to have a master's degree. This was in the 90s. It was a difficult time for education, as it is right now. And so I thought an MBA to understand the business side of education would help me to advance my career. What I learned in the MBA was about a field called organizational development, and I did that at the Rotman School of Management, and then we ended up moving to Ottawa, and so I started work in organizational development, which leveraged my French skills, my teaching skills, as well as my new business skills from the MBA, and was really a nice use of my strengths and my interests.
So it's a great first part of your story, Lisa, and I know there's a few more chapters that led you ultimately into the world of positive psychology. So I'm going to talk to you more about your story in the second half of the show, so listeners stay tuned for Lisa's unfolding career story. Meanwhile, I'd like to give you the lineup for today's show and the interviews you're going to hear. Marie-Hélène Budworth dreamed of becoming a doctor, but was so fascinated by her intro psychology course that she shifted focus and followed the clues to a career in organizational psychology. She's now associate professor at York University, and Marie-Hélène investigates how we can help people be the best they can be at work. Kate Heffron is a researcher and co-program leader of the Master of Applied Positive Psychology program at the University of East London in the United Kingdom. Her research shows how physical activity enhances well-being and cognitive functioning. Stay tuned to hear the research behind Kate's advice, which is just move. Clinical psychologist Tayyab Rashid uses a positive psychology approach to build what's strong to fix what's wrong in people. Hear Tayyab's incredible story of using positive psychology to diffuse a dangerous carjacking experience. Plus, you'll hear from Tammy Kolbatsky, founder and director of the Toronto Center for Positive Psychology and author of 10 Commandments for Couples, and Greg Evans of the Happiness Enhancement Group and Jackie Sinnard of the Application of Positive Psychology Following Job Loss and more. But we begin with keynote Gary Latham, professor of organizational behavior and HR management at the Rotman School of Management and author of Becoming the Evidence-Based Manager. Gary researches employee motivation and what makes people go that extra mile. His talk illustrated the positive benefits of subconscious goals on organizational behavior. So listen carefully, because this short interview is chock full of useful tips for anyone wanting to do better and live better. Here's Professor Gary Latham. Gary Latham, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you, Mark.
So what do you like about your own career these days?
Just about, I think I'm one of those rare individuals that I can say just about everything. It's sufficiently varied that if I'm not doing research, I'm explaining the research in the classroom to MBAs and executive MBAs, and I'm involving doctoral students in exploring phenomena that we don't understand, and once you get into it, you go, I'll be darned, who would have guessed? So I think my career is extremely exciting, to be honest with you.
Well, you speak with a lot of excitement and relish as you presented here today. And what do you do? For listeners who might not know more about that, where and what do you do?
Well, I'm an organizational psychologist in the Rotman Business School with a joint appointment in the psychology department. And as an organizational psychologist, I'm really interested in employee motivation in terms of what makes people want to exert effort and persist, go that extra mile. I find that area fascinating.
Great. I want to pick up on that in a moment. But first, is there one twist or turn or turning point in your own career that you can share with listeners? Did you always know that you wanted to be a prof? Was there something in between? What's something that brought you here to the present moment?
I'm a baby boomer, so my professors were those who were around during World War II, and they instilled in me the desire to truly make a difference. So simply doing laboratory research wasn't my cup of tea, although laboratory research is extremely important. I wanted to do research in the field and be able to say that I made a difference with regard to employees in various organizations, and I find that very fulfilling.
Great. So there's always that point where you finally realize this is what's important to me and not what's not important to me. It sounds like that was your moment.
Yeah, I think just being able to say there are so many people who dislike their jobs. If I can come up with ways that's going to increase their performance, increase their job satisfaction, and generally people like what they do well, if I can make a difference in that regard, I go to bed at night feeling good.
Awesome. Now, you just did this really great talk, Gary, and we all really liked it, the positive benefits of subconscious goals and organizational behavior here at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association conference. You talked a lot about goals. There's this thing called subconscious goals, and then you talked about supraliminal priming. So in a nutshell here, you know, can you just fill us in about subconscious goals and this thing about priming?
Before I do that, let me just say something about consciously set goals, because I've been studying those for the last 35 years. And what I and my colleagues have shown again and again is that if the consciously set goal is specific and challenging, performance really increases. And then in the last 3 years, I started studying and found, much to my amazement, that the subconscious plays a big role. And by the subconscious, I mean stimuli in our environment that we're unaware of and yet increases our effort, affects our persistence, affects our choice of what we're going to do, not do. If you'd asked me whether that sort of thing exists 5 years ago, I would have said no. And now I'm finding again and again, working with employees in field settings, that unbelievably, yes, it does. So now to answer your question, superliminal is just a fancy way of saying, as opposed to subliminal, stimuli you can't see. These are stimuli you can see, whether it's a word, whether it's a picture, whether it's a sentence, whether it's whatever. And you don't see the relationship that it has on you, but it does. It affects your choices. It affects what you do and how you do it. And I find that both amazing and maybe even a little bit scary.
So you gave so many interesting examples in the presentation. Briefly, is there one example, especially workplace related, right? Because we're talking about career buzz here and you're interested in employee effectiveness. What's an example that listeners might find interesting about this kind of priming that might have some kind of positive impact in the workplace?
Well, just as a general recommendation, I would put pictures, photographs on my wall that portray achievement. And the reason why I say that is we found with call center employees whose job it is to raise money for an organization, when they had a picture of a racer in front of them while making calls to potential donors, they raised way more money than those who didn't have the picture. Everything was the same, except one group sees a picture of a racer, another group doesn't, and yet the group with the photograph, having nothing to do with money, raises way more. I just think that is spellbinding.
It was astonishing, and there was a whole bunch of examples you gave. I wonder also, does it have to be some goal or some priming that the individual is unaware of, or can people create their own vision board, their own collage, and put it in alignment with their own consciously set goals? Does that work?
Yeah, I think it does. I haven't tested that, but my experience as a psychologist is if you're trying to lose weight and you put pictures of thin people on the refrigerator door, or you have prompts or what have you around dieting and the benefits of exercise, it's going to be a constant reminder to say no to that second piece of cake at dessert.
And so it really does have a positive impact. You gave one other example I found quite profound in the context of the workplace about ethical behavior. You were using the example of banks, and can we prime people to do ethical things and thus avoid catastrophic problems that we've seen in our world recently? Can you say a little bit about that ethical behavior, and can we prime ethical behavior?
Well, for sure, that's way out there, but that's the direction I would like to see our research team go. What I was explaining is an experiment where we had people read vision and mission statements in various annual reports of companies and had them focus on words having to do with trust, fairness, altruism, doing stuff for others. And then we put them in a task having to do with negotiations. And negotiations always brings out the worst in everybody. You're always trying to get the best deal for yourself. And we found that people who were primed to look for words having to do with fairness came up with much more enduring and fair negotiations than those who simply looked and read the same statements but did so only for what do you think of the overall quality, how well written is it, what have you. So just focusing on fairness led to fair behavior.
Great. So it sounds like if we set both conscious goals and we're aware of this subconscious priming together, like you used the word additive. Sorry. That sounds like what we're really trying to achieve. Is that a tip, or is there a way that listeners can take that home and make it work for them in their own lives?
Well, there's the old adage, two heads are better than one. Now I would say two goals are better than one. You want to have consciously set goals, and you want to prime subconscious goals.
Great. Now, Gary, in your own career and life, I wonder if you could share with listeners one thing that you've personally learned about making good career and life choices, just drawing from your own experience.
Well, I've always gone with passion. Our first speaker this morning, his whole research stream is around passion.
That was Bob Valorant.
Yes. And I think Bob is showing scientifically what a lot of us have known from an art form for centuries, and that is if you follow your passion, you'll never be bored.
Right on. If people want to find out more about your research or learn more about it, how do they do that?
Oh, I thought you'd never ask. I've got a book called The Evidence-Based Manager, and it's the title says it all. If you read that book, it's kind of like a primer on chemistry, or I hate to cook, or what have you. It's behavioral science principles you can apply to your everyday life.
Awesome. Gary Latham, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thank you, Mark.
That was my interview with Gary Latham at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference. I'm your host of Career Buzz here, Mark Franklin, at 89.5 FM and worldwide, CIUT.FM. I'm joined by conference chair Lisa Sansom. Lisa, wasn't that such an interesting thing about setting both conscious goals and priming for subconscious goals? What did you think of that?
I loved it, and it really opens up a whole new field of how do we make change, how do we move ourselves in the direction that we want. How do we help ourselves? I thought it was fabulous. And he's such a great speaker and really brought the science of positive psychology to life.
Absolutely. He was is so entertaining as a speaker. I'd encourage any listener to check him out on YouTube or hear about him and read some of his work. He's actually a prolific researcher. And I loved what he said earlier on in the interview. Generally, people like what they do well. They like what they do well, which is a real focus on strengths, which I know is such a cornerstone of positive psychology. What did you make of that statement?
I like that as well. And quite often when we talk to people about the career direction that they're going in, because I've done some career coaching with a variety of people, they'll point out all the things that they like doing, and then somehow there's this thinking of, well, I can't possibly do that at work because work's supposed to be no fun. And with work-life balance, it's become more like a work-life integration. Your whole existence is work and your whole existence is life. So may as well make the best out of it and go pursue something that you enjoy and that you're good at.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a holistic focus that I know at Career Cycles, that when we speak to clients, that is precisely the focus, and helping people to figure out what are their strengths and how can they use them daily at work.
Absolutely.
So let's follow up with this next interview here. It's Marie-Hélène Budworth. She's a York University prof. She's focusing on organizational psychology and a radical and fabulous narrative alternative to the performance review. Here's Marie-Hélène Budworth.
Marie-Hélène Budworth, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you, Mark.
So what do you like about your career these days?
There's a lot that I like about my career. I actually feel fairly privileged to be an academic. There's a great deal of autonomy. I ask a question. I think I'm paid to sit back and think of a question and then go out and have that question answered as best as it can be answered, and that is my job. And aside from that, I share it with other people, which, you know, I get them excited and equally as interested in the things that I think about. So, where else do you get to do that?
That's wow, you're saying that with a big smile on your face, too. And where are you working? What do you do? What's the specifics of your job right now?
I'm an associate professor at York University within the School of Human Resource Management.
Yes.
I am actually, as of July 1st, 2012, just a few weeks ago, I am on sabbatical, so I'm on research leave for a year.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank
so where
you.
Is the sabbatical going to take you?
A lot of the year will be spent here in Toronto, and there's a number of things that I want to write and get done and get on paper. But in addition to that, I'm going to be spending some time in different places. So I'll spend a little bit of time in Paris and a little bit of time in Eastern Canada, moving forward other projects that I have in mind.
Nice. So how did you get here? What's one turning point that you can share with listeners? Did you always know that you wanted to be an academic, a scholar, or, you know, was there some twist or turn that brought you here that you can share?
No, I thought I wanted to be a doctor.
Yeah.
I liked physics and chemistry. I knew I wanted to work with people, but I was really into the natural sciences, the hard sciences. So I went to McMaster to study science, and I took an intro psych class. It was a required course and loved it. So I started orienting my courses towards psychology. I actually ran into my intro psych professor just today.
Oh, is that right?
Which is quite an experience.
Yes.
Yeah. So I took a number of psych courses, and there was probably one course, cognitive science, that completely changed. I thought, you know, this course answers everything that I've ever wondered about the world. So from that day on, I was hooked to psychology. It still took me a bit of time to figure out what part of psychology I wanted to be engaged in and how I wanted to be. I thought I wanted to be a counselor for a period of time, but once I found organizational psychology, it was pretty clear. I was hooked. That was it. And here I am.
So clues. There's been clues along the way, and it's so interesting to hear one of your big clues was actually from the coursework yourself.
Yes.
So just as a little aside, for anybody who's listening who may be in the midst of a academic program or maybe is thinking about going back, what can you say to them about the need for certainty before you start versus an openness to allowing the process itself to set your direction?
I think certainty is impossible for most. You know, there are a few of us who are gifted from a young age and know exactly what our passion is, but I think that is not most of us. I think certainty is only something you can have when the experience is behind you.
Right on. Yeah. So that will be a relief to many listeners. Thanks for sharing that. Now, here we are at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference. You just presented on this very interesting topic about appreciative inquiry and using that kind of coaching in a organizational context. So what can you share with listeners just to orient them to what you're talking about?
Yeah, so the work I'm doing is just asking the question, are we helping people be the best they can be at work in the way that we manage them today? So in, you know, the traditional approach is you sit down and I tell you all that you did in the last year that was really horrible. And I ask you, next year, don't do that stuff. Let's figure out a way to get you to do stuff that's better.
Right, also known as the performance review.
That's right.
Right.
This horrible interview that we all dread and the managers dread doing, because it means I have to sit down and reprimand my employees for an hour. So I asked the question, well, why are we doing this? This is an old structure that we have entrenched in our model of employment that, research tells us does not improve performance in a predictable and consistent way. So let's reorient that conversation so that we're thinking in that conversation, we're thinking about the positive aspects of performance, the strengths, the things that people have done in the last year that are particularly strong.
Yeah, keep going.
The things that we've done in the last year that are particularly strong and effective and that have really guided success. And if we can focus on those successes, then perhaps we can help people, motivate people in a different way.
So when you focus on success, that's tricky. It's a bit different because managers, as you say, are constantly looking at what went wrong. So in this case, we want to look at what went right. And one of the interesting things that you presented was that the way to do that is through a story. So what is that approach that a manager might use with their staff member who's sitting in front of them that can get that conversation going?
So the technique that I'm interested in is a technique that's been developed by a gentleman named Kluger, Avi Kluger. And he has given us a process that might be helpful during to have this conversation. It's called Feed Forward, where you ask a series of questions that really at the core just get the individual that's in front of you to tell the stories of success from the past. So in the last year, what are the things that you've done that have really been the height of success for you, have been the things that have really, where you've been a star? And you hear those stories, and then you hear a lot about those stories, the entire story, the complete story. You probe and ask questions until you've heard it all. And at the end of that, you ask the question, now, as you move forward in the next year, are you doing things that'll get you closer to or further away from those types of successes? And from there, you can have a conversation about what is the path I'm on at work, what are the things that I'm doing, and how can I make it, so how can I create an environment, a context, a situation, a space where I can be successful?
Right on. So it's a storytelling or narrative approach. Sometimes that word is used. And, you know, Career Buzz has all been about getting those stories out there. People seem to like to tell their stories. It's a feel-good experience. People are experts in their own story, so it's easy for them. Maybe makes life a little easier on the manager because he gets the other person talking. What are some of the benefits or some of the positive outcomes you're seeing of using this kind of approach?
There are a few very clear benefits. The first is that it improves the relationship between the employer and the employee. I feel like I've been heard. I feel that I have voice in this organization. I feel like I have input into things that I do here. I feel more supported by the manager. The manager is better able to support because I know exactly what this person's potential is, what they're working towards, and I know the spaces in which I need to lend them support. There's also a greater perception of fairness in general within the organization. So I feel that I'm heard here. I feel that I have a space here to say what's on my mind. And we also see that there are outcomes. So we're about to publish a study that says that we actually, from this process, you can see improvements in performance down the road.
From the employee.
From the employee, that's right.
Because they've actually experienced the storytelling approach instead of the, you did this wrong and now fix it.
That's right. You get a 3.2 out of 6 on your performance evaluation.
It sounds like it makes a lot of sense. Any listener is just going to say, well, of course this makes sense. So what's going on out there in the real world now, as far as you know? How many people are embracing this technique, and how is it going to be disseminated and get out there in the real world so that listeners maybe have one of these experiences as opposed to the one that they probably are having?
Right. So, you know, we're at the Positive Psych Conference. There are a lot of folks here who I think are doing variations of it in their own way, in their own practice. But in terms of most employment settings, this is not what's happening, right? We're entrenched in an old system that is really caught up with the measurement of performance, and then from that measurement, that guides the feedback that you receive. And as I was saying earlier, it's largely numerical, right? So you get, this is the number you get on this. Well, what does that number mean in terms of what I need to do? So we're nowhere close to using this type of system. At the moment, our work will be published, but it's pretty early. This is, there's a bit of a critical mass in the literature that often there needs to be a lot of studies on a topic before it tips over into large-scale practice, and even then sometimes it doesn't make it over. So the work of getting it into practice are things that that we as academics, doing interviews like this and possibly writing practitioner pieces on occasion, might be helpful in doing. And there will be some progressive employers that will adopt it early on, and hopefully those types of things will start to tip the scales and ask people to rethink the performance management process.
Right on. And if we have some employers listening right now and they want to find out more about it, is there any research you can point them to, or a website or something that might be useful if they want to find out more?
Yeah, so the easiest thing to find would be the work that Kluger has done, because he's really pioneered this. So if you were just to Google Avi Kluger, Kluger, he has a lot of information that would help in the practice of feed forward. There is work that I would have on my own website that would be downloadable, that you a few empirical studies that you could get that would help too.
Great. And what's the site?
So to get access to that, you could I think the best place to go would be to go to my my blog. That's mariebudworth.com.
Great. And finally, Marie, from your own story, and you've shared a little bit with us here on Career Buzz, what can you share with listeners from your own personal experience that you've learned about making good career and life choices?
So, you know, I've actually thought of this question several times in the course of my life, and I think the thing that has really supported me in being successful is that I've been open to almost every experience that's come my way. I say yes to most things. It's I think that's a corny movie, isn't it? Yes, Man. But I do. I say yes to most things, because every new experience connects you with a new network of people, gives you a new set of skills, and then you can make choices about whether or not this is a path that you find useful, helpful, interesting, or not. So there have been a lot of times where I've started down a road, done a few things, and then this isn't for me, and adjusted. It's how I found this career, and it's how I pick projects typically, and it's been pretty successful for me.
So it's about saying yes to most things, but then there's this error correction part that
Absolutely.
You didn't say right off the bat, so that you can then evaluate that thing against some kind of internal criteria.
Right.
That seems to be it.
Yeah, yes, but be reflective.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Maria Lynn Budworth, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thank you.
And that was my interview with Marie Budworth at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference. You're listening to Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, and I'm joined here on the phone by Lisa Sansom. Lisa, what did you think of Marie's interview, and especially that last piece of advice? You know, I say yes to most things.
Well, and this is exactly how my career unfolded as well. So I'm a big fan of being open to opportunities and saying yes to things and judging them against your own value system, your own interests, your own strengths. But people are looking for lifelong learners now. The pace of knowledge just keeps changing and fast and fast and fast. There's always something new to learn. That's what employers are looking for. So you've got to be open to opportunities.
And it was a great choice to have Marie as the line up there. That feed-forward model I've actually looked at in more detail, and it just seems like such a wonderful alternative in a narrative way, getting people telling their stories. What did you think of all of the results or benefits that she shared with listeners?
Oh, absolutely huge. As she pointed out, people dread going into performance evaluations. Why would we assess people on their failures and their worst moments when we have so many shining experiences to share and that we're proud of? And we know that the number one way to increase self-efficacy or self-confidence in people is to take them back to moments of their own success. There's a key role for managers and organizations in helping people remember their successes. You're going to get more engaged employees. You're going to get people putting in more voluntary effort. You're going to get people following their passion, their interests and strengths, and giving back to the organization. I think it's just huge and positive.
Great. Well, those were two great opening interviews. We're going to take a quick station ID break, and then we're going to come right back with four more interviews.
From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, presenting the history and evolution of sound for 25 years and counting. CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
And we're back at Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin of Career Cycles. Before moving on to our continuing interviews, I want to let listeners know about the amazing archive of Career Buzz inspiring career stories. You can click the Career Buzz button at careercycles.com for all of the interviews we've had over the past few years. And you'll also hear part one of the Canadian Positive Psychology Association conference interviews from August 15th. You'll find that pretty high up in the archive there. You can also hear the August 1 show about living, loving, and working together as a couple, which was a popular show. Lisa Sansom, I'm interested to carry on our story about your career. You told us at the beginning that you had done an MBA, and that led you to organizational development. What happened next in your own career story that led you into the world of positive psychology?
Well, as I became more familiar with the world of organizational development, I also learned about leadership coaching and executive coaching. And I sent myself back to coaching school, which I did at the Adler School of Professional Coaching, which is based in Toronto. They're now Adler International Learning. Fantastic program. Learned a lot about coaching. Loved learning all the coaching skills. But kind of wondered what was the proof behind this concept. And I was getting told a lot to use my intuition. But as a beginning coach, I didn't feel I could really rely on my intuition for the service of my clients. So then I learned about this field called positive psychology. I think it came through my email inbox in a newsletter. So this is an example of being open to new opportunities.
Yes.
I followed up on this program that was called the Master of Applied Positive Psychology down at the University of Pennsylvania, and was very fortunate to get accepted into this fantastic program. So I finished up the master's about 2 years ago now. There's a brand new class starting now. I'm thrilled for them. And it just became a big passion, a big interest. It really brought together a lot of things that I had been doing, the teaching, the organizational development, the coaching, and a lot of threads that I saw through my life really came together very nicely in the world of positive psychology. So I'm thrilled. It's a fabulous community. It's a fabulous discipline. And I'm just so excited that Louisa Jules had this great dream of starting the Canadian Positive Psychology Association that I have been fortunate to help with.
Right on. And it's great that you mentioned Louisa. Listeners would be familiar with Louisa because she actually co-hosted Career Buzz for a few years. And so she brought many leading lights of the positive psychology world into the studio here to talk about their research, including Barbara Fredrickson and... let's see, the guy who's based in the UK, Robert Biswas Diener.
Yeah, he's wonderful. I mean, they're both amazing. Yes.
So it's all good, and that's great that Louisa's been part of this process as well. And it sounds like you simply said yes to be the conference chair of that conference. How did that happen?
Well, the board was very small. We were getting started, and whenever Louisa talked to Martin Seligman, who's acknowledged as the father of positive psychology, she would ask him, what should we do on the Canadian Positive Psychology Association? And he would always tell her, Louisa, you should have a conference. So Louisa dreamed up the notion of having a conference, and then the board was so small. I think we were about three or four people when we started out. Everyone just had a very hands-on role, and I said, well, I've helped to organize a couple of conferences before. I'm willing to help with this one, too. And so they said, okay, you're the conference chair. And there I was.
Just say yes.
Just say yes.
There you go.
And it was a great supportive team. I could not have done it without everybody on the board. And the board grew as we went through the conference. So now we're eight fabulous, wonderful people who were all very involved. It was definitely a team effort.
Great. Well, speaking of the Masters of Applied Positive Psychology, we're going to hear from Kate Heffron now. She presented at the conference, and she actually co-leads the program, not in Pennsylvania, but at the University of East London in the UK. So we'll hear Kate Heffron, followed immediately by clinical psychologist Tayyab Rashid. Here's my interview with Kate Heffron.
All right, Kate Heffron, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you for having me.
What do you like about your career?
What I like about my career is that it allows me to do many different things, such as travel for the conference, present, but also my main love is about research and meeting individuals and researching different things that we can do to help us engage our bodies and also enhance our well-being.
And what are you doing and where?
So currently I'm a researcher and co-program leader of the Masters in Applied Positive Psychology at the University of East London.
And so that's the East London in the UK, not the one in South Africa, right?
No, yeah, UK, right where
you.
The Olympics are right now.
Yeah.
And I'm researching how physical activity can enhance well-being with clinical populations, such as individuals with breast cancer and also mental health difficulties.
Fascinating. Now, you know, people have all kinds of interesting career stories. We've heard on Career Buzz so many different stories. What's one turning point in your career story that brought you to what you're doing now?
I'd have to say it was when I was sitting in class and we were learning about this concept called post-traumatic growth, which is where people who have undergone trauma can be enhanced in some aspect of their life, change their philosophy, these sorts of things. So it was Lance Armstrong, and we were,
yes.
It was listening to his story. I was doing a master's in performance psych, so sports psychology.
So this is the bicycle racer from the States who had cancer and recovered and won the Tour de France, right?
Exactly. And he said, if I had to choose between winning the Tour de France or having cancer, I would choose having cancer. And I thought, that is incredible. So how? And that led me to moving away from trying to enhance people's sports abilities to trying to enhance people, especially during difficult times and trauma. So that's where it led me to cancer research.
Isn't that great? So one story, Lance Armstrong's story, inspired your story.
Mm.
Isn't it interesting how other people can influence us in our careers and lives?
Completely. And the more I'm in this, the more I research, the more I'm a psychologist, I realize that people are the key to changing our stories and to enhancing our stories as well.
Right on. Now, here we are at the conference, mm-hmm. and you just presented today, and I was at your session. It was well attended and a great presentation. What's one or two pieces of from your research? There's stuff about physical activity and really about using the body. And you talked about positive psychology influencing us from the neck down instead of just the neck up. I found that really interesting. So from the neck down, Kate, what can we learn?
I think that the one of the most important things is to move. And we look at physical activity and we think exercising. We think, you know, heavy aerobics. And it's really just about moving the body, engaging the body. And especially with clinical populations, we find that when they start engaging activity and start identifying as maybe an athlete or somebody who does athletics rather than a cancer patient or a mental health patient, we see that this can help reconnect the body, but also send them on different trajectories, and we start seeing them engaging and becoming confident in their life and it transferring over. So I think physical activity has a huge impact on our self-esteem, our self-confidence, self-awareness, and our well-being overall.
Now, you mentioned post-traumatic. What about people who haven't gone through any trauma, but listeners who are just going through their lives and dealing with everyday stuff? What message is there? How can they harness the power of the well-being that comes from physical activity that you were talking about today?
That's a great question. And I think, I wanted to get that across, that we don't have to just have trauma in our lives to engage us and reconnect us to the body. But I think using and engaging with physical activity from their own individual perspective. So if they like going out and being around people, then and starting engaging with others while they're doing activity. If they like going outdoors, then to start engaging activity outdoors. So start implementing, again, strengths. We've been doing some research around character strengths and implementing them into programs. So normal population and other people can engage in activity using positive psychology interventions as well.
If people are experiencing some sort of career distress right now, they might be driving in their car or at home or even at work and kind of feeling blah, not so great about their career and their work situation, what might they do, or how might some of what we've just talked about here influence their thinking about career and life choice making?
Move. Get out and move. Research is starting to show us the difference or the enhancement in cognitive functioning. Being able to exercise for short periods of time can help you then afterwards concentrate, be more aware, more open. And also, again, we see that, you know, when we use activity with individuals who have had trauma, this can help them engage with changing their life trajectory, start engaging in different activities, seeing things differently, and reconnecting to themselves. So,
and you did stress the difference in your session about physical activity being different from exercise. Can you just clarify that for listeners? So when you say move, we're not talking about you have to go on the exercise bike for so many minutes a day. That's not what you're necessarily talking about.
No, this is the idea of if physical activity is different from structured exercise. Structured exercise has this idea about progressed fitness. So it is about the treadmill and these sorts of things. But physical activity is walking upstairs, it's going for a walk, it's gardening, it's anything getting your heart rate above resting level and getting, you know, sweat, and getting you moving and your body and your heart rate up. And that we can do this in 10-minute spurts over 3 times a day, but we must do it 5 times at 30 minutes every week in order to get the benefits, the physical and psychological benefits.
All right, you heard it here. So it's 30 minutes, 5 days a week, is that right?
Yes, and much more for children.
And much more for children, great. Finally, Kate, from your own personal life, what can you share with listeners about making good career and life choices from what you've learned in your own life?
That's very interesting.
Sometimes that's a little bit of a reflective question there. And, you know, people have their own stories and their own trajectories. And sometimes it's easy to look at the research, but drawing from your own inspiration and your own,
I think,
you know,
my engagement in activity has always kept me, I think, aware and open to opportunities, and to see that, you know, things can change if we're aware and open to them changing and flexible. And resilience is a huge thing about that, being open to new opportunities and not feeling closed in. I think that connects with the theories of broaden and build, and being open and aware and yeah, I think that's something that engaging activity just engages the mind in a much healthier way.
Right on. If people want to find out more about your research and about you, how do they do that?
They can go on to my research website, www.katehefferon.com. It has all my publications and lectures and this sort of thing on it.
Great. Kate Hefferon, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thank you.
Tayyab Rashid, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you.
So I'd like to start off just by finding out what you like about your own career these days.
Well, the most important thing that I like about my career is that I'm able to help young adults explore their best inbuilt assets, their strengths, and then find some practical, realistic, achievable ways to use those strengths towards their own navigation through the peaks and valleys of life.
Nice. And where do you get to do that? What are you actually doing in your career?
I do that at Health and Wellness Center, University of Toronto. It's a health counseling and medical health center. And I offer individual and group psychotherapy to students.
Nice. Now, you're a licensed clinical psychologist. What's one interesting twist or turn in your own career story that brought you here that you can share with listeners?
I think the most interesting story was that a couple of years ago I was carjacked, and these two young men asked for my driver's license, for everything, which I gave them, and I was in a full-blown panic attack at that point. So, and I just had started doing positive psychology. For some reason, which I don't fail to understand why, I asked them, what are you good at? They looked back at me and they said things which I'm sure your audience would not like to listen, but I probed further, what are you really good at? And then they said, this is what we do. And they started dancing. They put an inverted baseball cap on my head and I started dancing with them. We had a ball. After 45 minutes, they left me at a dark corner in a street. But they taught me a lifelong lesson that what are the good questions to ask young people?
That's an amazing story. Did they steal anything from you at that point too?
Police found my car next day unharmed.
Very interesting. Thanks for sharing that story. So, Tayab, you're here at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association. You've just presented to an audience, and your topic was about positive psychology interventions and the nuanced clinical applications of them. What's one nugget, one maybe practical application that you can share with listeners?
Oh, one nugget is that we are complex human beings. We have both negative and positive states and experiences with ourselves and with others. We need to have this sort of wisdom to understand that one negative experience doesn't end our life. So it's that moment if we can take a deep breath recollect ourselves, or even take a diversion, a detour, and come back, and then look at the situation from a more holistic, more broader point of view, we'll become much better problem solvers.
So, like in a work context, let's say somebody who's listening now has some really negative experience at work, some bad interaction with their boss, or some sort of project that just didn't work out properly, and they're just thinking, "Oh my God, this is a complete disaster." All right, so what do they do?
Well, I think one of the things which I try to teach my clients is to avoid as much as they can. Yes, in the heat of the moment, yes, but if they can go back and relive the moment, avoid the word superlatives like complete.
Like a complete waste of time or a complete failure.
He is a complete idiot or she's a moron. We use these sweeping character assassination sort of terms so quickly. They give us some sort of gratification, but we don't realize that they actually are detrimental to our own mental health.
So what's an alternative thought that somebody can choose instead of those negatives that they might replace those negative thoughts with in their own mind?
So, Mark, there is a little pause even before that alternative thought, and that is, again, taking a deep breath and even removing yourself from that situation, even if you want to go for a walk, for a drink, or for example, research shows that even when you're angry, if you show people nice pictures of nature, their mood changes. So find a way and make a list of things which you can do in those trying, testing moments, and then come back. Trust me, in most situations, you will have a different perspective. And if you're still hung up on that, find a good friend who can give you a good advice.
Awesome. So finally, let me just bring it back to the personal. You've got to a certain place in your own career now, and it sounds like you're enjoying what you're doing, and you presented with a lot of positive energy. What can you share with listeners about making good career and life choices from your own personal story?
We put too much emphasis on the cosmetics outcomes of work, which is salary, fringe benefits, and research clearly shows those are important. If you are making money which doesn't make the end meets, that's not good. But if you're making decent amount of money and then you are working way, way too hard to double an income with this hope that from 50,000 to 80,000 your happiness will double, I think you're just dreaming. What you can do is you can invest those resources, that time, that effort, in doing things which you absolutely love, and find that passion. We heard about passion this morning. Find that passion in your life. Find that flow. Find that engrossment, that deep engagement, because that is going to do you tons of good, mental good, than just working hard and being stressed about making money.
Great. Tayab Rashid, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
And those were two short interviews that I conducted at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association Conference. I'm your host of Career Buzz, Mark Franklin, and I'm joined here by with Lisa Sampson, who was the conference chair. Lisa, what did you think of Tayyab's story of using positive psychology in the carjacking scenario?
Isn't that a powerful story? I remember the first time that I heard it, and because I know Tayyab and work with him on the board of the Canadian Positive Psychology Association, I've heard him tell that story in other situations and in other contexts to different audiences, and it never loses its impact. It's just so powerful, and how a really great example of how even in a very dire, difficult situation, I mean, I just can't imagine what I would have done in that situation. There are positive psychology tools that will help, and it's just the most improbable of places, but how powerful and how resourceful of him to go and take that situation somewhere else.
It was astonishing. I like both of those interviews so much, and I want to make sure that we save time for two more interviews. So I'm going to set them up, and then we'll come back in the last minute or so to pull things together. So listeners, get ready to hear from Tammy Kolbatsky. She's the founder and director of the Toronto Center for Positive Psychology, and we'll follow that with Jackie Sinnard, who talks a little bit about the application of positive psychology following job loss.
Dr. Tammy Kolbatsky, welcome to Career Buzz.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
What do you like about your work and career?
Well, I'm a psychologist in private practice, and I've been seeing couples and individuals in my private practice for over 14 years, and I also run the Toronto Center for Positive Psychology, where I work with groups, and I'm just very, very passionate about getting this information about positive psychology into the general public and helping people to flourish and to grow in their personal and their professional lives.
That's great. Now, you said passion, and we heard from Bob Valeran this morning, there's harmonious or obsessive passion. So which one is it for you?
I'm hoping that I'm harmonious.
That's great. You're doing this interesting work with couples. What's one turning point that you could share with listeners about how you got here in your career?
Well, it's been a very gradual process, but working with couples is something that I've been doing from the very beginning. The turning point as far as this book that Dr. Zeig and I have published, The Ten Commandments for Couples, actually took place about 3 years ago when we had met for lunch at the American Psychological Association conference here in Toronto. I could be wrong, it could be 4 years ago now. And we started bouncing around these ideas about what we would like to collaborate on. And we both had this idea that wouldn't it be wonderful to create a resource for couples that that is sort of a wealth of information based on wisdom from many different practitioners, psychologists and counselors.
We're here at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference, and Tam, you've just presented about the book and the Ten Commandments for Couples. One thing I found fascinating was that unlike a regular book that you read from cover to cover, this one had what you called little sound bites. I thought that was really helpful. How is it that you chose to do it this way instead of a traditional book?
What Dr. Zeig and I decided was that we wanted to be able to access those couples that we as therapists often hear complaining about, which is we just don't have time to read an entire book from cover to cover. So we thought in this day and age when everybody's so busy and their lives are so hectic, wouldn't it be great if we could have couples access a resource where the advice is presented in sound bites, which is a lot easier to digest than reading a book from cover to cover. So, you know, we always hear the I'm too busy to read a book excuse, and that excuse doesn't apply with Ten Commandments for Couples.
Awesome. So we've got listeners now driving in their cars or at home or at work or whatever, and maybe they're having some trouble or they want to improve their relationship. So what's one commandment or one idea that you can share with listeners?
Sure. Okay. So one of the contributions that I personally added to the book is called Developing Appreciation in Your Relationship. And one of the commandments in this contribution has to do with catching your partner doing something right and then telling them about it right now. Not only does this help people to raise their awareness about their partner's positive attributes, but it also highlights to people's partners what they can do more of in order to foster their happiness. what we know from the positive psychology research is that one of the most important ways to become happier is to appreciate the good that we already have. When we appreciate what we have, what we appreciate actually increases in value. So that means by verbalizing the things that are already going well in our relationships, we can bring a deeper sense of happiness into our lives, and at the same time, we can alert our partners about the positive impact that they're having on us.
Great. What's one thing that went right for you today, Tammy?
One thing that went right for me was that I really had a wonderful experience meeting a lot of the people that have come to the conference. I think that there's a tremendous energy. A lot of people are very interested and passionate about being here, and it's a very, very gratifying experience.
Right on. Finally, from your own Sinyard, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thank you.
So what do you like about what you're doing in your career these days?
I think positive psychology is definitely a key passion of mine, and I think I've always been fascinated by what makes certain people happier than others, and growing up in rural Newfoundland, coming from a culture that very much epitomizes positive psychology, I was always interested in the why and the how.
Right, and what are all the things that make up your career these days?
So right now I'm a PhD student, so that has many aspects, of course, doing research, but teaching as well as getting counseling experience and supervision, so helping teach other counselors to become first-time counselors. So.
And what's the PhD in? What's the focus?
It's educational counseling, and I'm looking at the processes of positive psychology following job loss.
Very interesting. Let's come back to that theme in a moment. You were just presenting here at the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference. The session was looking back, looking forward, and you were looking at all of the research that has come out of positive psychology. Here we are on Career Buzz, talking a little bit about career and work. What are a couple of key things that you can tell us from a look at the research in positive psychology about the influence of positive emotions and the world of work?
Positive emotions are very important. They're very much related to people's sense of meaning. Positive emotions relate to passion. And also, it's very important for workplace culture. So when you're working around people that have positive emotions, there's a camaraderie. People are very attracted to that. And you
Yes.
start to get an upward cycle of that. So, and I think a lot of the research says we all chase intellectually stimulating jobs. At the end of the day, how happy or miserable we are is a function of who we work with. And I think a key part of positive psychology is leveraging your strengths. And the research shows people that practice with their strengths do well. So the power of having everybody focused on their strengths, I think, creates a lot of that synergy for them.
And that was my interview with Jackie Sinyard at the Positive Psychology, Canadian Positive Psychology Conference. You can hear more of the interviews. There was a few more that I would love to have played on this show. Unfortunately, we have 1 hour and that's as many as we can fit in. So the balance of Jackie Sinyard and Tammy Kolbatsky you can hear at the Career Buzz link at careercycles.com. I'm joined by Lisa Sansom, who is the chair of the Canadian Positive Psychology Association's conference. Lisa, what did you make of especially Tammy's story there about using positive psychology with couples in a personal realm?
Oh, I think it's critically important. There are so many things in positive psychology that you can bring into close relationships with your partner, with your spouse, with your child, with anybody that you want to have a great relationship with, and even going right back to those positive performance reviews, managers and employees. I think it's absolutely critical to your own well-being and creating positive relationships.
Right on. Now, we're just going to have to wrap up in a moment here. So if listeners do want to find out more about the association, Lisa, how do they do that?
PositivePsychologyCanada.com or Google the Canadian Positive Psychology Association.